Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. This is Renee. I hope everybody's having a good week this week. It's been some strange weather all over the world, and even here in Florida, we've had some real highs and some real lows. I guess it's supposed to be warm again today, which is something I think most of us are always grateful for, the reason we moved to Florida. Well, one of them, anyway. I started doing some research last night and yesterday afternoon because I thought to myself, I was watching a special on TV, and I'm always drawn to things about bullying or things that don't seem quite fair to me. To my way of thinking, fairness, of course, is in the eyes of the beholder, but it's also something that needs to help monitor who we are. A sense of fairness, a sense of fair play is really, really important, I think, in everything that we talk about, from the bullying right on down to everything we've talked about for the last couple weeks about the young girl who had the tonsillectomy. There was a little bit more about her story on the late news last night, and it doesn't sound very good. And my heart, again, goes out to the family of this child. However, I was reminded during my researching yesterday and looking at the internet and everything about what brought me to wanting to do the radio show, about what brought me to write all the articles that I've written in regard to the way we treat each other and the sense of fairness that we have in the world today. I go across little things like a lady fired a gun to get her boyfriend's or husband's attention because he was attacking her. So she fired a gun. She got 20 years in prison. 20 years. And I'm thinking to myself, so now there's a big, a big drive. And here in Florida, I think that they've put it before the Senate to pass a law that you can fire a warning shot with a gun to let somebody know that you mean business, to let somebody know that you have a gun, especially if your life is in danger or you feel that anything you've got going on in your life is in jeopardy. So it brought me back to my original writing that I named the show after. It's called Heart to Heart. And it made me think again, and I came to some good realizations that I'd like to share with all of you. First, I'm going to read Heart to Heart to remind us all how and why I started doing this show. Two wrongs do not make it right. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you, the golden rule. He ain't heavy, he's my brother. What goes around comes around. All of these old sayings indicate that we as a people realize the importance of caring for one another. So what's the problem? Why do we continue to do harm to others? Every day in my personal life, I come across angry, hurt people who, for whatever reasons, pass on their pain to everyone they meet. We are not designed to harbor hatred and anger. We are designed to be functioning at our highest level when we are balanced. Balance is created by our nourishment, which includes food, conversation, and interactions. Since we all know we cannot change anyone but ourselves, that's where we must start. Even in the animal kingdom, where it is often survival of the fittest, there is a ring of respect for territory and family. Respect and a sense of fairness must be recovered and applied in our daily lives. We need to really consider how our words and actions affect those around us. Often during a conversation with someone struggling with a health challenge, I learn of deep emotional scars, old words or actions that have been left to fester and get stronger than they were ever meant to get. Letting go is always harder than it sounds. So today, right now, we must make a conscious effort to stop inflicting those wounds. Sadly, it's often to those we love the most. They forgive us more quickly, but they seldom forget. Saying you're sorry is nice, but not as nice as never having to say you're sorry. These sentiments are not to preach to others, only ourselves. Imagine a world where everyone endeavors to be the best that they can be. Till next time, from my heart to yours, Renee. My mind hasn't changed not one iota since the day I wrote this. I wrote this in 2009, a couple months after my grandson was attacked. And while I was in the middle of some real challenging things at my workplace. And even though I've moved on and even though things have changed, they haven't. Everything I wrote in this article still holds true today. However, I did come across some kind of exciting revelations. I have Shelley with me, and I'm going to bring her in. Good morning, Miss Shelley. How are you? Shell, are you there? Well, I thought I was bringing her in. I have another caller that would like to speak this morning. Good morning. This is Renee.
Hi, Renee. My name is Shaquita.
Hi, Shaquita. How are you?
I'm okay. I wanted to, pose a topic within the bullying realm and see if you can provide any feedback. In the parent, mother-daughter relationship. I've been personally, I own a magazine, and I've been looking into this issue as well, not only in schools, traditional bullying, but I'm coming to find that it's happening even more so in the parent-child relationship.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you, for example, like on Real Housewives of Atlanta, how Candy's mother is being very controlling of her decisions and is using her, authority, or influence as her mother to get her way, So what do you feel about the whole parent-child bullying aspect of things?
Well, are you asking me, Shaquita, if I believe that as parents we have a tendency to bully our children to get them to do the things that we want? Is that the question you're asking me?
Well, I think it's different realms within the parent-child bullying aspect. I just want to see what your take is because I'm pretty young. I'm fairly young. So as a young person, speaking with elders in my research, a lot of them feel like it's warranted. They feel like they should have that type of access and don't see it as bullying. So I just basically wanted to know what would be your outlook on that,
Yeah, that's a very interesting topic and a very interesting way to look at a parent-child relationship. And we do tend to think that we can take the upper hand. And we do think especially me, I'm 65, so I have great-grandchildren. So in my lifetime, I think I've tried all those different scenarios. I think I've tried to be their friend. I think I've tried to be their boss. I think I've tried to be their caregiver. I think I've tried all those different avenues, and for every different scenario, something different usually works. If you have a 15-year-old daughter, 15 is really tough for a girl. I'm sure you do sound young, so you probably remember that better than I do, being 15. and having an issue in school, or having a boyfriend issue, or having a personal issue about what you think you look like or who you think you are. So when I only have one daughter, I have some granddaughters, but I have one daughter and three sons. And when she would come to me about issues with boys, I handled it very poorly. I'm going to tell you the truth, because I was like so upset that my 15-year-old daughter was thinking about sex that I could hardly stand it. And so I'm being really honest about this, and I've reflected on this many, many times in my older years, and I don't know how I would have done it differently, except for to make her understand about the sex is for grown-ups, and it just is, because dealing with the feelings that you have when it comes to relationships that involve that being that close, there's a myriad of feelings that come through. So I was all of those things. I went from being a Gestapo to like holding her and crying because I didn't want her to give away something that was so personal for her until she was really sure that she did it and understood it, you know. So I played all those cards, I think, in dealing with that. With my boys, it seemed to be different how I handled them, too. And boys with their mom have a little bit, there's less, I don't know, they don't want to fight with you as much as your daughter does when you're the mom. Now, my husband could say anything to my daughter, and she took it as written in stone. So I do think, though, that one of the worst things that we do as young parents is to not listen to our children, not hear them before we evaluate and try to step in. We think we know what they're going to say because we're reflecting on our own childhood, but that's always not true. So you need to really hear what they're saying so that you can evaluate it and do it the right way. That would be my best advice to anybody with any situation, is to really listen before you try to fix something.
There's also another piece to that, is that there is bullying between, you know, parents and children, and sometimes it's the children that bully the parents because they have parents that are more concerned with having a good relationship with their child, and they don't know how to adequately show authority without being mean to them. They're afraid of being mean, and then they have a child that overruns them and actually causes a lot of problems in the house. So the bullying can go either way. But a lot of times children believe they're being bullied when they're just being given rules and regulations, and maybe they don't want them. I'm not saying that's your situation. I'm just making a comment.
Sorry to interrupt you, but I guess I'm more so focused on, I'm a 30-year-old woman. And so my mother had me when she was really young. So in my personal experience and in my research, I'm more so speaking on the adult parent child relationship. Mm-hmm. So that's
well,
what
and
I
are you a parent now, honey? Are you are
yes,
do you have
I am
children now?
Yes, mm-hmm. I do.
And how old are your kids?
Oh, I only have one son and he's 8.
Okay.
But being the oldest of my family, and my mom mm-hmm. being a single parent, I had mm-hmm. to step in as second parent, so I did grow up a lot quicker than a normal average, you know, teenager would.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess mm-hmm. what I'm trying to say is, you're right, it does happen in both spectrums, but I guess what I was more so commenting on, the transition that parents have to make in their way of parenting. You know, we are managers when our children are young. So, yes, your scenario with your 15-year-old is totally warranted. But as you get older and as your children grow, your parenting has to evolve. You are no longer the manager. You're now the consultant. And a lot of parents have an issue with that transition. You see what I'm saying? So it's a lot of tactics. More so coming from the parent than it is from the child in a lot of ways, you know. So that's what but I believe you pretty much answered me. But I was just speaking more so on the adult parent-child relationship.
Well, that's a very interesting observation that the parent-child relationship actually...
Shelley?
Yes, Shelley. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I want you to introduce yourself to Chiquita.
Oh, oh sorry, I didn't know I was speaking to another person.
Oh. Yeah, I had... When Rainey tried to bring me in earlier, I had accidentally muted my phone, and I didn't realize it until she said she couldn't talk to me, and then she brought you in, and I didn't want to interrupt. But,
I'm sorry. I'm just taking up time here.
That's actually pretty funny. Yeah, I'm Shelley. Rainey and I have been friends for well over a decade, and very, very close. We find it very easy to talk on this, but sometimes we have... we're very consistent in how we look at life, very similar, but a lot of times we have a slightly different vantage of how we discuss something or how we see something. So that's how we're able to keep things interesting, because we're not always 100% of the same mind, but he and I are very consistent in our view of the world and what we're trying to achieve with this show. So it's kind of good.
Okay, cool. Well, nice to meet you.
Very nice to meet you. I thought your questions were very well put and well thought out and very thought-provoking. So it was a great topic.
Okay, good.
Are you, you mentioned when you first identified yourself that you have a magazine?
Yes.
Is that what you said?
Yes, I do. It's called In Her Soul.
Say that again.
It's called In Her Soul magazine.
In Her Soul?
Yes.
What does that mean?
In Her Soul.
Yeah, In Her Soul, S-O-U-L. So this is the stuff that I like to speak about in my magazine, just really trying to bridge that gap, you know, because, I mean, me being stuck in the middle of being an old soul, but still looking like I'm 14 years old as a 30-year-old woman, you know, you deal with a lot of stereotyping, and I know it happens both ways, but mm-hmm. I am primarily of from African-American descent, and I do feel a lot of that controlling and guilt trip has a lot to do with other things. So that's why I just wanted to get from an elder's perspective, you know, in comparison to me, of course, you know, on how in 2014 we can get away from that stigma of young people not wanting to respect their elders anymore. And from the young people's perspective, we feel abandoned, you know. So, yeah, so that's been the number one issue in my research and my statistics of the whole, you know, adult parent, I don't want to say parent-child relationship, but parent, you know, parent-son, parent-daughter, mostly it's the parent, it's the mother-daughter relationship that really does suffer. So,
hands down.
Now, one of the things that we've talked about many times on this show is, you know, consistency. You know, if a parent is trying to impress upon certain behavior to their children, then they have to be living that way themselves. One of the things is rebellion or disrespect is when a parent is telling you, you can't do this, you have to do this, and then the parent isn't.
I say, not as I do.
Yeah.
Right.
How many times have you heard that one?
Mm-hmm. Yep. And then the other part of it is the consistency is huge, you know, saying what you mean, meaning what you say, and acting on your words. The consistency is huge, and I notice a lot of modern parents are very inconsistent because they're almost afraid to follow through on a warning. But then what happens is they lose respect from their children. They don't understand. You're not supposed to be your kid's friend. You're supposed to be a loving example to them of how to become an adult. Once they're adults, then you can be their friends. Like you said, there should be some sort of a transition that goes on. My sister has three. We're both in our 50s. My sister's, she's got three kids, and two of her kids have kids. And I've had to help my sister become calmer in helping them as the adult parent because they're not her little kids anymore. And a lot of times she'll say, oh, you have to do this and you have to do that and don't let them get away with this. And she almost like was barking out orders to them. And I told her, I said, you know, I said, she's a parent now. She's not your kid anymore. Let her make her own mistakes. Give her guidance where necessary. If she asks for your help, offer it, but don't interfere. This is her life. If you see something glaring or you have a piece of advice, then just say, hey, you know, honey, you know, I used to go through this with you kids. Maybe you can try this. Put it out as a piece of advice, not, oh, my God, you can't let that happen, and you have to do this, because it changes the tone of the advice, and then the adult child will rail against that. They don't want to be told what to do anymore. They're adults. They have their own life. But they'll, listen to constructive advice if it's put in a way that's soft-selled. You know what I'm saying? And I think that's where
is that an issue that you're coming across with your mom at this point in your life?
Oh, yes, most definitely. Yeah. And my mother is very, very extreme. She's very conditional in the way that she offers up her love. And I'll give you a prime example that I'm going through as we're speaking. I've been on my own for the last 4 years, and the reason why I say that is because I lost my fiance 4 years ago, and we're originally from San Francisco and relocated to LA, my mom and I. So we're the only, you know, support system that either of us have. And I just recently started a business, which would be my magazine. I just launched it last year, and was living on my own, paying bills and everything. And my mom, I asked her for financial assistance, because she sent my brother over to me, kicked him out and sent him to me. So I'm not going to turn away my brother, you know?
Right.
In short, she asked me, instead of her giving me financial assistance, she said, well, I need help too. And you're doing your business. So let's try to work on our relationship, because we've always had this tug of war relationship growing up. So she's like, you know, we have to work on our relationship, just trying to put a best foot forward. And I believe that. So I moved in when she works for the post office. So she's like, I'll take care of everything, you know, until you get back in school, et cetera. So now, what was it, 3 days ago, I'm not a messy person, but she went into my closet and said, you know, this is not organized, you know, accordingly. You need to get up and get in this closet and organize your things according to the way that I see fit. And when she gets that way, it's easier for me not to respond, because it's coming from an abrasive place. And, you know, when a person is aggressive, it's automatically going to turn into argument. So I rather just keep my peace and let things die down, let her say what she's going to say, and, you know, keep it moving. But she's, you know, egging at me, provoking me, trying to get a rise out of me, and I'm ignoring her, so that's upsetting her. And she says, well, since you want to take your sweet time to get up, you got 30 days to move.
Oh,
and she gave me a 30-day notice.
Oh, wow.
She gave me a 30-day notice. So that's what I'm saying. It becomes conditional, because, you know, I feel like, and this contributes to spanking and certain disciplinary actions as well when it comes to parent and child, is that I do feel like, because a number of our parents are stressed out. My mother is a single parent. She has 4 children. She had me at 16. So I feel like just over the years, she's harbored a lot of frustration, and it comes out through stress, you know, so it's targeted. It just spews out on children, you know, and spouses, and vice versa. It happens with kids to their parents as well. But in my particular situation, I've tried to always play my position according to how I was raised, which is always respect your mother regardless. But as I'm getting older and coming to understand the dynamic of the quote-unquote mother's handbook, it's like, okay, as a mother, how could you do those things? You know, because I'm a mother now, so I don't comprehend how serving a 30-day notice would equate to me not getting up as quickly as you would like me to. You see what I'm saying?
Absolutely,
that,
I do.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
I've seen other situations play out like that. I'm sure that Rini has seen similar situations. And the individual, such as your mom, when you over-control other people's situations like that, it means you feel out of control over your own life. And a lot of times when
people
have clear control of their own lives, they try to over-control everybody around them, that they have some sense, whether they have authority or not, they have a sense of authority over those people.
Mm.
And so what they do is they over-control the rest of the environment because they can't really control their personal space, so to speak.
Right.
And that's unhealthy. It is a little bit of a form of bullying because it's unreasonable. And in that regard, it almost feels like you're under attack when you're being subjected to that type of an unreasonable response to something, you know. And to come in and tell another adult. Now, if you were living in her house and you were a child and she said, clean your closet, that's different. That's just trying to teach you how to have good housekeeping skills and things like that. But if you're an adult woman and she comes into your home and your closet is unkept, you know what? It's your life. It's your home. Without being disrespectful to your mother, she should mind her own business, because at that point, it's not on her. It's on you. And you have to learn your way. You're an adult now. You have your own child. You have to, when you become a parent of an adult person, you have to have enough respect and love for that child to let them make their own life and just offer advice. If she had said, you know, honey, you probably would feel better if you'd clean this closet. It looks like it's a little disarray. If you want, I can help you with it. That might have been nice, and you might have even taken her up on that. But to put it out as a directive, like this is something you're being told, like you're 12 years old again, that's not acceptable for adult parents to do.
Yeah, and I believe this as a young person and on the recipient end of it, or even just misinterpreting the whole nature of it, it becomes abusive emotionally. Because it's like you're walking on eggshells. You don't know what's going to set this person off. They're unpleasable but want you to please them. So it's like as a child, as a daughter who naturally wants approval from her mother, it's like I had to desynthesize myself in a lot of ways and not take it personally and understand that this is bigger than I and it's just directed at me. But imagine all of those kids out there who don't have that self-strength, you know, that mental perspective to say, you know what, that's not my responsibility, your happiness is not my responsibility. It's a number of children out there, even me battling just from other family members. I have 17 uncles and aunties. So they all feel that because I am the oldest, that this is my job to endure.
Wow.
You know? Yeah.
Wow.
And see, that's what I'm saying. It becomes a twisted lesson from the elders to the young people, to the point where it's like, okay, my own mother, my own father is risking me as if they're a person on the street. So I think it does contribute to a lot of the rebellion that goes on, because it's a lot of disciplinary action going on, whether it be physical, emotional, verbal, that does not come with explanation. You see what I'm saying? Like when I discipline my child, I sit him down and explain to him why this is not acceptable or why this isn't safe. You see what I'm saying? But a number of parents just do, you know what, just do it because I said it, you know, and it becomes very, very abusive emotionally.
You sound a lot like me when I was 30, because I grew up in a Irish Catholic family, and my father's favorite line was, do as I say, not as I do.
Okay.
And if I said why about something, he'd just give me this blue-eyed, starry look. And he was a very sweet man. He was never abusive to me, but it was like, Rini, you can't ask me why. I'm your father. So
mm-hmm.
when I had kids, that was the first promise I made to myself. So here's I want to say this to you very, very badly, because it seems like you need to hear this. You're breaking the cycle, honey. You're breaking the cycle. because it's probably been a cycle that has gone on for a whole lot more years than you have any idea that it has.
Yes,
so now because you have the realization of how wrong this behavior on your mother's part, it's not evil, it doesn't make her a mean person, she simply, purely doesn't know any better. So she sees, oh, my God, this is a reflection on me because she's not getting out of bed in time and her closet's a mess. So she's thinking that it's her position to say to you, hey, you know, if you can't do things the way I've taught you how to do them, you know, I have, there's nine of us that live in my house, honey, and I'm the matriarch, and I can be a real bitch. I'm sure of that. I'm sure you could get every one of my children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren to say that, but they all love me. But I don't walk into their rooms and say anything because I'm done with that. If you didn't learn how to keep everything organized, you know, I let go of that a long time ago. So, but she hasn't. So now you're breaking that cycle. Now, your 8-year-old boy, he's going to see a whole different kind of tutoring, mentoring, all the things that you know you need to be. So the I can't give you any words that are going to change this.
Oh, no, it's okay. It's not.
But you've got it, honey. You've got it. And you're and all these other aunts and uncles in this huge family, they've all been kind of like, you know, it's like the Stockholm syndrome that everybody talks about. It's become their way of life, and it's just, it is what it is. But now, because you are so astutely aware of the fact that that's just wrong, then you can break that cycle and change everything for the generations to come in your family.
Indeed.
It's very interesting. I heard something recently, and when I first heard it, I had a hard time wrapping my brain around it, but I've actually been working with this concept, and it actually is true. I had gone to a lecture recently, and the lecturer said, you cannot worry about someone and love them at the same time. And struck me wrong because it's like, well, of course, if I love somebody, aren't I going to worry about them? But he went on to say that love and fear are two different emotions. You don't have them simultaneously. When you're worrying about somebody, that means you don't have faith in them, you don't have faith in the circumstances, and you are anticipating some negative outcome. When you truly love someone, that comes from faith. That comes from all positive emotions. There's really only two emotions, love and fear, and every little tiny minuscule aspect of each one of those. So love has, you know, dozens of emotions under it. Fear has dozens of emotions under it. Oh, and by the way, hate comes from fear, okay? So when you're worrying, when you're not trusting someone, that means you're not engaging love. It doesn't mean you stop loving them, but you're not engaging love. You're not out of faith and love. And when people realize that, when they can do a check into their own emotions, when they realize they're starting to fret about the actions of another person and they feel that coming up, they should release it and say, you know what, I believe in this person. You know, I brought them up well. I've taught them the whole things. If I see them faltering a little bit, I'll interject a little bit of constructive advice. But ultimately, this is their life, and I trust them to learn the life lessons that are going to get them where they need to go. Because you can't learn life lessons by being directed to do so. That's where your mom is making her biggest mistake. She's not going to teach you anything anymore. All she can do now is, like you said, be a counselor. I don't think that's the word you used, but like a consultant, just to kind of guide you there. If there's something that you're not sure about and you go to her and she offers assistance, that would be welcomed by you. But at this point in your life where you are now your own entity, you're now your own adult, and you have a child that now you're trying to inspire and help grow up positively, she should just be there on the sidelines having faith that you will eventually get where you need to go. And when you don't operate from that, that means you're not operating from love, and people don't recognize that. And when you do, it can be a very powerful shift in your life.
Yeah, you're very, very correct on that. And I had to learn that myself as being, I guess, her mini-me. You know, I was trained over the years to be like her, to react like her, to conduct like her, you know. But I started to go against that simply because it was just coming from a place of contingency, you know. Like, no love should be contingent. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you're going to love
yeah.
me, if you're going to engage in love with me, it should not be with expectation. It's because you love me and you want to love on me. And, again, that's what I was saying. It goes back to that whole, you know, trying to have confidence in myself when the person that usually validates you, which is your mother or your father or both, you know, mm-hmm. is finding every negative aspect in yourself. And psychologically, I found in college that it contributed to my low self-esteem and whether or not I was able to make decisions. You see what I'm saying? So
wow,
I had to make that connection as well, because it's like if I'm constantly being second-guessed by the people who are guiding me, you know, then of course it's naturally to second-guess myself and not be confident in my decisions as a mother, as a person, as a woman, or whatever it is that I'm doing, you see? So I had to let go of that unhealthy behavior and understand that she's projecting, you know, it's a projection of her fear. Yeah, so the negative place that it comes from is from her failures and her fears and things, the things that she's stuck on. So, you know, I just basically wanted to get an affirmation on my perspective as a young person, not only in my personal life, but just in the whole relationship between our elders and young people. I really feel like we need each other, you know.
Very good subject, because it is something that I see almost on a daily basis in interaction with adult parents. I've said this before on the show. I'm a big fan of, like, Judge Judy and the People's Court.
Oh, yeah.
And some of these judge shows. I find it interesting. First of all, it helps me to learn about the law. I like to see how the law plays out in certain situations. But it also surprises me on how many adults children bring their parents to court, or parents bring their children to court.
Yes, yes.
And get admonished by the judge. Some parents have brought their kids to court, and the judges go nuts, and they're like, what in the heck are you thinking? Well, I want to teach them a lesson, blah, blah, blah. There's no lesson here to teach. And the judge gets actually upset with the parents, like, oh, my God, what are you thinking? You have a kid here who's got a steady job, who's making the most. They're doing all the right things. And because they missed one payment here, what are you thinking, you know? And you see these judges that just think it's absurd, but the parents were like, oh, we have to teach them a lesson, and blah, blah. And so the parents thought they were doing the right thing, but they weren't, because it was from the wrong place. It was from, I'm going to show you you're wrong, instead of let me guide this individual to making the most of their lives. And again, it's the difference between operating from love or fear. You know, any negative emotion is in this fear realm, because when you have a faith in your child and you just guide them, that means even if they make mistakes, all right, as long as you continually guide them, they'll eventually find their own way. They'll make their own path, and they'll figure it out with your gentle guidance. But you can't hijack your children's lives, and this is where a lot of parents make a mistake. It's like, They're flying their own plane. They throw them out of the cockpit and jump in the plane and try to fly it for them. Well, then it's not your child's life anymore. If you're running it, let your child do things and just passively support them. Tell them what's right and wrong, but don't give them orders of how they have to conduct themselves within those parameters. Let them live their own lives, and they will eventually do the right thing as long as you have faith in them.
Right, and I just want to end with this. I just want to say that I think just on both ends of the spectrum, a lot of parents use their children as distractions from the things that they have to do or have to face in their own lives, you know, which is a very warranted thing, because speaking from being a single parent myself, my fiance passed, you know, it is hard not to revolve everything around your children because they're relying on you. And I know it becomes a habitual thing, but I just want to encourage both our young people and our elders to get back to themselves, because the best teacher is the way that you live your life. You know, like, I would never go to a hairstylist that's not keeping up their hair, you know, and that's just the way that I look at life. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So if we just revert back to the true issues, it won't be any need for any crutches. From the children's perspective as well, because I know a number of my cousins that still haven't moved out, and they're like 45 years old.
Wow.
You know. So yeah, but I really appreciate you ladies' time. I don't want to take up any more of your show.
Well, I'm so glad
phenomenal
that you called.
You brought up, this is what we look forward to with callers calling in. But how many parents do you see today, Shaquita, that had a dream when they were younger? They wanted to be a singer, or the man wanted to be in sports, and now they have a child that they're pushing in that arena, almost living through them. Meanwhile,
mm-hmm.
the child wants to do with that achievement, and they become stressed out and depressed and everything because the parents behind them pushing them and pushing them and pushing them, because they're actually living vicariously through their kid, thinking
right.
if the kid's successful, then somehow that makes them successful. And we see
yes.
this play out a lot, and it's very harmful when you try to push your dreams on your kids. Let your kids figure out what their dreams are, and then just support them in getting there with good advice.
Well, yeah, I to answer your question, in my research, I've definitely seen well over 85%. And that's just out of the people that I've interviewed, though, you know, so that could be on a tipped scale there. But
right.
I mean, just even in my own personal experience with my culture, you know, let's just speak about
mm-hmm.
my particular culture, it happened because of the whole crab in the pot mentality. If you got something, then that means that I can't have it. So because you have it and I gave up my life for you, then
oh,
that
wow.
means you owe me the right to be able to access you. You see what I'm saying? Our access,
oh, yeah,
your
yeah,
benefits
yeah.
through you. Like, because in my personal experience, my mother naturally feels that her debts are my debts.
Oh.
Yeah, seriously. Like, I remember recently having to get my car fixed, and she owed our family mechanic, I think, a couple of $100 or something. And she's like, don't go there because I owe him. I'm like, okay, but that's your debt. You know, like, why go to somebody that I don't trust simply because you want me to avoid him? And she
right.
really got upset with me,
right,
you know,
right.
because I went to that mechanic. So what I'm saying to say is I really believe in my own experience that's what happened. My mother, having me at 16, she was very much on her way to success. She was a basketball player. She was about to be drafted to this pre-league that formed the WNBA.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a lot of things that happened, but because of the disconnect with the communication between her mother and herself, she explained to me that she didn't even know what a period was at 16 years old.
Wow.
You know what
well,
I mean?
Because
yeah.
she, and because she was an athlete, she might have her period
yeah.
might have been screwy because
exactly.
she was such an active athlete. Yeah.
Exactly.
You know,
yeah.
Where is your magazine sold? How do we get the opportunity to see your magazine?
Well, you can definitely search me on Google In Her Soul Magazine, or my direct website is IHSmagazines.com, because I have a male's version as well that would be releasing called In His Soul. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to put an insert of each magazine from each gender's perspective, because, you know,
oh, wow.
like, there's a lot of women that want insight to in his soul, but from a female's perspective. And there's a lot of men out there who are now trying to develop more in the spiritual aspect and want to start settling down and understanding women and things of that nature. And I really feel like that dynamic in itself is losing it, you know, like the whole family dynamic, the language between sexes. You know, we need to really start understanding each other so we can keep the family dynamic together. You know,
yeah. Have you ever read any of the books by John Gray? You know, Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, because I think he's brilliant how he assesses the difference in the way people communicate based on gender influences, the structure of the hormones, and the physiology is actually different between men and women.
Yes, indeed.
And when you understand that, it kind of takes off the plate getting angry if the man says this or the woman appears to be harping, because when you understand where they're coming from and that this is just how they communicate, then it takes it off the plate of being personal, and it doesn't hurt you anymore because it's both just the way he is. So you just have to receive it differently, you know.
Right.
And it's very... I love his books. I think he's brilliant. So
and I've learned that in my own, you know, process through college, you know, just going through different psychology classes, general ed. And basically I've come to find that, you know, I used to think that males didn't have any emotions, you know. I really believed that. I just thought that
it seemed like that sometimes.
You know, just as synthesized creatures, and we're just overly emotional as women, and that's just the way it was. But it was just like, okay,
that's
the more
funny.
I started to understand, it's like, okay, it's like communicating with someone from another country. You know, you may think that they're saying something mean to you, or you may think that, you know, it's coming from a place isn't it funny? But it's so true. It's like, you know, but if you really
are words of wisdom, honey. I think those are words of wisdom because we are totally and completely different. Our way of addressing problems, issues, challenges always stem from more of our heart along with our intellect, whereas men go from their intellect and think that if their heart gets involved that they're going to make a mistake.
Right.
So I think that's for 30, honey, you got a really, really good head on your shoulders, and I'm sorry that your mom doesn't see that and respect that, but it probably scares her a little bit.
It's one issue that I've come to terms with my mother is that she's afraid of being superseded.
Yeah.
And what I'm saying that to say is it's a lot of parents out there who consume themselves and their children. And I know my mom feels because I was an unexpected pregnancy and her life was on a route to success, and because I was here, she had to derail. But I've been trying to encourage my mother. She's only 46 years old. You know, you can still do all of the things that you wanted to do then. You know, you're procrastinating, focusing on the things that you couldn't do. And the more that I succeed and I notice that things happen in my life, I can't even come and share them with her because she'll get an attitude. It'll just turn like Dr. Jekyll, Mrs. Hyde, where you can tell it's something in her that's unsettled with that news. It's like, well, why does it have to be you all the time?
And she's jealous. Instead of being happy for you and proud that her offspring, her child, achieved this accomplishment, somehow you achieving something makes her feel less about herself, and that's unfortunate.
Exactly.
I'm a big proponent. I've talked on the show a couple of times. I'm a big proponent of utilizing the law of attraction, you know, and what you think about, you bring about. So if you're sitting there feeling like a victim and feeling sorry for yourself and looking at life and that things just don't work out for you, you're just going to constantly perpetuate those type of things. But if you're a person that generates from love and faith, and you, no matter what's happening around you, no matter what kind of chaos or perceived problem, if you don't look at it as a problem, if you look at it just as a situation that you've got to get through and take responsibility for what's happening to you,
Right.
It may not happen instantaneously, but eventually it will work out okay. And I've been employing this for the last 2 years, and that's been my experience. You know, I used to be much more emotionally volatile going back a decade ago. And I'll tell you, at 55 years old, my life is a lot more fun now. And it's not that I don't have stuff pop up to deal with like everybody else, but because I respond to it differently, it has completely different outcomes now. So it makes it a little bit more fun to deal with life. And here at 55, I'm writing a book. My friend Rainey, a little bit older than me, she's got this radio show now. So there is no limitation on at what time in your life you can bring about something that is very fulfilling, very exciting. You know, you've got people in their 20s and 30s that feel like they've hit a rut, and that's so unfortunate that they don't realize there's no time limit. You can go for your dreams at any time you want, and it's a shame that your mother doesn't recognize that.
Exactly. But again, back to the, you know, the superseding aspect, I just really feel like when a person, okay, for me personally, when I see somebody doing better than I am like, okay, how can I take notes from what you're doing, you know, and apply it to me?
Exactly.
You know?
I love that.
Yeah, you know, I love to humble myself and say, well, teach me, please teach me, you know. But, you know, when a person is who's afraid of being superseded, it naturally turns into a competition, you know. Because, again, it's a crutch. It's a distraction from the fact that I have to actually face my emotions and my insecurities and fears and decide on whether or not I want to choose to live instead of just existing.
You know, there's a, I don't know if you've ever heard of it. It's called The Magic of Thinking Big by Daniel J. Schwartz, PhD.
Mm-hmm. I've heard of that book, yes.
Second chapter of that book is called Excusitis, the Failure Disease, like excuses, but he calls it excusitis, and he says that, you know, the play on words, and he says that's the failure disease. And what that means is that people that don't have successful lives will sit around and create all these excuses for why they are where they are.
Exactly.
And never involve themselves. It's always
somebody else's fault. Yep.
Everybody around them is luckier. They're not smart enough.
Oh, my gosh.
Instead of saying, how can I go about and achieve this dream, they condition themselves of consoling themselves as to why they can't. And that's just not the case, because anytime you turn your head around, like what you're doing is perfect. You see somebody that's successful. Okay, well, how did they get there? And then you look at what they did, and you get inspired by it. Somebody who suffers from excusitis will look at somebody who's successful, and instead of trying to figure out how they got there, they'll try to figure out why they can't. And they spend more energy on consoling themselves and confirming they can't do it than trying to be inspired by the person who did do it.
Exactly. Yeah, pretty much in a nutshell.
I pulled up your site, Chiquita, and your magazine. Very, very, very nice. I'm kind of sad that your mother is in a bad place and can't have the kind of admiration and pride that she should have, because I certainly would be. You've done a hell of a job here, and
thank you. I really appreciate that.
Well, you know, it is really, really great. And for 30 years old, it sounds to me like you've got the world right where it needs to be for yourself. I hope that you can get past the fact that your mom has issues and that they really have nothing to do with you. But I would, before I said anything else, I think you should, because you're obviously a writer, you're interested in doing things like this, you need to write your mom a letter, and you need to tell her exactly how this is affecting you, and say it from love. And maybe, I've told this story on the show a million times, it's safe. I've been married 46 years, as long as your mom has been alive.
Mm-hmm.
And it saved my marriage so many times, I can't tell you. Because, like you said earlier, men are really different from us.
So I'd write a letter, and sometimes I wouldn't even give it to my husband because after I'd read it, I'd think to myself, oh, Renee, get a grip. You know, this is not a big deal. You can deal with this yourself. And then other times, he would hold it in his pocket for weeks and keep reading it until he got it. You know, it would take it would take him really, really digesting the things I would say for it to make a difference in what was going on with us. So you don't want to sever this relationship, but you also don't want it draining you. So I would try that, and I would tell her the truth, you know, with love, but tell her the truth and see if it doesn't help, because you do realize that she loves you. She's just not understanding it the way she needs to.
Right, and I understand from, you know, just from a woman's perspective, you know, being a single parent, and, you know, she had both of her parents, but it was a dysfunctional situation, you know.
Right.
So
right.
I totally understand, you know, her plight, and that's why I really believe it's not in me to resent her, you know.
Good, because that'll only hurt you.
Exactly, exactly, and it'll only hurt my son, because then I'll be a self-fulfilling prophecy, you know.
And that is damaged because
I love the way you put
things. Yourself to go there.
What did you say?
I said, I love the way you put things, a self-fulfilling prophecy. Oh, my good God, how many of us have felt that way in our lifetime? But I don't think I've ever heard anybody say it quite like that. You are really, really very remarkable, young lady. Very remarkable.
Thank you so much. And, I mean, as far as your suggestion, I definitely have put a lot of effort into trying to enhance, well, not even enhance, like it's my responsibility, but more so do my part, you know, within the relationship to try to meet the situation even more than halfway. And I just noticed that until my mom is able to come to a place of ownership, I don't want to say never as in, you know, never, but it won't be able to progress because of the fact that I'm the type of person, I deal with things head on. I live in truth. I walk in truth. You know, I can't, as a friend, as a family member, call myself a loyal person if I'm allowing you, you know, to fall, if I'm allowing you to destroy yourself. So when it comes down to those situations that we have, it, you know, when somebody always averts responsibility, how can you, you know, progress? Like your husband, you said that it'll be times that he'll walk around with your letter in his pocket for weeks. My mother is so stubborn to the point she'll just rip it up in my face. It has happened before. I'm not at all giving up on that aspect. I do believe in time it will be a moment where my mom, you know, generally comes to that place. But as a daughter and to maintain my sanity, I have to let go of trying to gain her approval through things, because then I'm never going to live within my success, if that makes sense. I'll be carrying the burden of, oh, but my mother doesn't approve. You know what I mean? So that's where I really have to come to a place, like now being in this situation and having to figure out on whether or not I want to allow everything to just go to court, because it's coming from a place of retaliation and landlord-tenant law. You can't enforce a 30-day notice on a month-to-month tenant based on retaliation.
Right.
You know, but
well, I got to be honest with you. This is a huge topic. This is something I think we should talk about again. I believe you would agree with me on this, because you speak very, very well. You speak very eloquently. What you say has merit. What you're talking about is not personal. And what I mean by that is that there are so many people I come across that are in very similar situations as you are. So I think what we discussed here today is very beneficial, and I would love it if you would call in again. I think you brought a lot to the plate. I'm anxious to check out your website myself, And I hope that we hear from you again. I think this was a
Oh, yeah, definitely. I'm usually up at this time anyway, so I'm glad I found you guys. Michelle, you guys are actually talking about something that I was going through at the moment. So, again, I'm sorry I took up so much time of your radio show.
It was our pleasure. It was our pleasure,
okay.
Honey. I hope as well, excuse me, that you call in again and give us some, you know, let us know how things are progressing. I'd also like to be in touch with you privately about your magazine.
Sure.
I just shared it on my Facebook page. We'll see what we can do to help it grow. And supporting one another is the best part of shows like this. So we are out of time. I want to very quickly say that the friend that I asked for prayers for yesterday passed very peacefully last night at about 9 p.m. And he will be missed by his entire family. His mom and his wife and himself have been good friends of ours for several years now. So our hearts go out to them as well as our prayers. And I hope everybody goes out there and has a great day today, and your problems are little ones. So God bless everybody, and we'll be back tomorrow morning with a recap of this week's shows. Thank you, Chiquita. Thank you, Shell. Talk to you soon.
All right.
Bye-bye, nice
guys.
Seeing you, Chiquita.
Bye-bye.
And, talk
bye-bye.
To you later,
bye.
Rainey. Have a wonderful day, everyone.
Bye-bye.